Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Funny, just played the audio from the post-game news conference with Mike Schilt talking about bullpen usage. And Kevin Acey in his newsletter acknowledged this morning that he asked a poorly worded question after last night's game regarding how it would be good to have a 5-run lead instead of playing all these close games.
I can't even imagine what that's like.
Which the answer to that is...
a poorly worded question. It is harder than you think.
The answer to that is, duh.
Yeah, duh.
You always want a bigger lead. I think sometimes, and this isn't on Kevin, this is on all of us here in San Diego, we're politer than maybe like the New York media, which probably would ask the question, hey, why are you overusing your bullpen, Skip? What's going on? You know, they'd just be a little more ruthless and direct.
Do you think your bullpen's overtaxed right now? Something like that.
And Mike Schilt,
I just didn't understand why Schilt, like, he got very defensive. It didn't seem
after a win. You know, you won the game. You're on a massive hot streak. But there's just, look, it's... You know, everybody's personality is different.
It's not he's like, hey, dummy, why are you overusing your guys?
You could catch me on the wrong day. You know, normally I think I always try to put myself in that situation of like, well, how would I answer? And I think, you know, look, there's a way to be confrontational and there's a way not to be. I had a chance yesterday to be confrontational. I chose not to. But I often make the other choice as well. And I just said, hey, whatever you want to do. It's up to you. We're happy to help. That was my, instead of, you know, really diving in and digging in, I just said, if you need help, let me know. And it kind of stopped there. So I just, again, you know, I don't know that doing a post game with a manager is always, I think it's always necessary. It's kind of a part of the gig, but it's not always, awe-inspiring. You know, you're not going to get any great detail about what happened or what should have happened. Sometimes they are.
Unfortunately, it's almost sometimes like a courtroom where you've got the witness on the stand and you've got a prosecutor asking questions. And, you know, when Mike Schilt's up there, Kevin Acey sounds a little bit like he's the lawyer trying to build a case against the manager for bullpen malpractice. Like, we see some evidence here that maybe you're overusing your high leverage arms. And I want the jury out there who are Padres fans making their decision just aware of some of the evidence. Has it come back to bite you? Oh, of course not. It's working perfectly right now. Guys are coming through every time you ask them to go out there. So far, all the evidence is on Mike Schilt's side. But I can see if I'm Mike Schilt and I'm up there on the stand, you know, I'm facing these questions. Yeah. Like, what are you trying to say here? That I'm not doing my job right? That I'm overusing these guys?
Fair.
And, you know, the consequences are going to be disastrous later? And he made the very fair point that, you know, I look at the usage very closely. It's not as though I have... just like, hey, does anyone have any idea how many times Suarez has pitched in the last 3 days? No, I mean, look, he's out there. Why don't we just bring him in? They consider that, obviously, to a great degree. Kevin knows that. Everyone knows that they're thinking about that. And now you got to make a decision. Do we feel like it's worth it to bring those guys in this game? And ultimately, the answer last night was yes. Now, Mike Schilt's not going to tell you all three of those guys are down today.
Right.
But my guess would be they're almost certainly all going to take today off, and they get tomorrow off for the off day. And then they'll kind of be reset, and you can start working again from scratch on Friday. Now, That's strategic information that he doesn't want to concede in a press conference setting. So I get that as well. So instead, he just kind of pushes back. It all really makes sense when you put it all together. It just ends up being an awkward, difficult confrontation. And again, AC admitted it wasn't the best way to phrase the question of what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, which happens, which absolutely happens.
Sure.
A lot of people misspeak. It's not, listen, this is not Watergate. This is not the end of the world. San Diego Padres are playing really good baseball. And, you know, by all accounts, everybody's doing their job exactly the way that they need to do it. And I have no problem with it. I haven't really at all this year. We've seen instances earlier in the year, Benny, when Robert Torres would come in a non-save situation, but you had a chance to win the series. And you're like, okay, it's a 4-run lead. He's not going to get the save. Let's go to him anyway. Why? Because I want this effing series. I want to win this series. I don't blame him at all. At all.
Adio in the chat says, at today's postgame, I need Schilt to come into the press room dressed as Colonel Jessup. Did you order Robert Suarez into the game?
That would actually be a real, that'd be a way to diffuse it a little bit. But yeah, man, listen, it's baseball, tensions run high, team's playing great. That's really the story.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the Code Red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Son, we live in a world where bullpen usage is a hot topic now. Okay? So, who's Jessup in this? Schilte?
Schilte's Jessup. Yeah.
I can see that.
Absolutely.
I can see that.
But again, in that case, Colonel Jessup clearly was doing something inappropriate.
Correct.
And I don't know that Mike Schilt is doing anything wrong with how he's managing his bullpen because, again, they're pitching great.
They are.
They're doing fantastic. We don't know. I mean, you know, these guys might do better. Scott tells us, I want to be out there as much as possible.
Yeah.
I pitch better when you use me more often. So, okay. I mean, you're listening to your guys. As Mike Schilt said, he's listening to his guys. He's gonna keep in mind how often they've pitched, and he's going to make those decisions. And he's doing a great job of it right now when it comes to the bullpen usage. Could there come a point where maybe today, you know, he's in a spot because he's used his guys a lot and now he doesn't have some of his arms? Yeah, I'm worried about today's game.
Well, I'll tell you, man.
You can't worry about today's game last night. You got to win last night's game.
I'll tell you, we never really know the full story, but like if Tanner Scott told Mike Schilt before the game last night, bro, if you need me, I'm ready. And it's a 3-run lead, and Mike Schilt doesn't go to him because he goes, and he puts in a lower leverage guy and he gives it up. Guess who's on Schilt's ass today? We are. Everybody is. So you use your guys. I understand it, man. That's why this 162 game season is just it's a war of attrition. Who can manage their bullpen the best? Who can have the most effective? Efficiency is key. Efficiency really was the main word there. Tanner Scott goes out and throws 30 pitches 2 days ago. He's not in there last night, but he threw 11. He threw 11 and then 18 or something. So they've been fairly efficient, so that gives them the opportunity
and remember,
to pull the trigger.
You also could have asked Michael King for another inning,
yeah.
But you're being careful with his usage
innings.
As
yeah,
well
man,
and his pitches and his innings, so it is all connected. He was great, but you want him to be available for the postseason.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to get to October and go, well, we're kind of done with Michael King. Oh, well.
Who's next?
Week. So you've got all of those decisions. And I will say confidently that Mike Schilt and Ruben Niebla and the Padres front office are very aware of everything that's going on around their pitching staff.
Every
and
nook
their
and
bullpen.
Cranny. Yeah, man.
Very aware. You may agree with some of their decisions. You may disagree with some of them because there's some gray area in a lot of those decisions. But they are quite on top of what's going on their own team.
All I know is it's another win for the San Diego Padres over the Pittsburgh Pirates. We did see Jerkson Profar. I think he's been hit in every game he's played against the Pirates this year. Is that right?
I believe that's true.
I get it. Slider, no intent, but it's got to stop.
We've got one of those no intent hit my pitches coming up in Don't Do This in a few minutes as well.
Yeah, we do.
Which is interesting audio. But we'll hold on for that. We need a contestant for Take on Woods right now. Give us a call, 833-288-0973. Got our musical trivia challenge coming up. Chance to qualify for the trip to Las Vegas. The Carrie Underwood tickets coming up in just a moment. Again, it's Big League Wednesday. Adam Jones traveling, but we will have Brett Boone in at 8:35 to join us to talk about the Major League Baseball playoff races and everything that's going on right now in baseball. Padres going for the sweep today. What was the stat you just had? So they have never swept season series from two different teams of six games or more in a
season. That's right. No Padres team has ever swept two season series of at least six games. So if you win today, you get a chance to do that to the Nationals and the Pirates. And I would like that very much.
So if they do that, that's 12 games above 500 just against those two teams.
Which is what have we been hammering
all year?
15
games above 500 right now would be 16 if they won today. So that would be two-thirds of their games above 500 just against those two teams right now. We've been saying that all year. You've got to make some hay against these teams, and they finally are.
Now, and again, they're not blowing these bad teams out, but it doesn't matter. They all count as one win at the end of the day, no matter how many runs. It makes me so happy that they are doing what they needed to do. That's taking care of business.
I mean, everyone's talking about how hot the Diamondbacks are. They're not blowing everybody out. They had to pull another one out of the fire against the Rockies last
two
night on a walk-off. They did. But they were down to their last strike and about to lose that game. They did pull it out, but a win's a win. I'm sure they're not giving it back. Padres aren't giving it back. All right. See the callers calling in. Let's get to today's game. It is time to take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
All right, Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. All right, we got Brian here. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. All right, you're a contestant today. If you can beat or tie Woods, you will qualify for our grand prize drawing two nights today at Resorts World Las Vegas and two tickets to Carrie Underwood Reflection at Resorts World Theater. I heard Chris Ella mentioning that she's extended that residency already into the spring because of high demand. And I know it starts today, I believe, and goes on. You can get your tickets at access.com. That's AXS.com or RWLasVegas.com. But if you want to win them, you gotta take on Woods, our champ in our musical trivia contest. Your categories are Sprechen Sie Deutsch. Those are German band song related items. We've got Singing the Blues, five song titles and bands that include the word blues. And our new category, 24 hour bands. Those are five bands that have a time of day in their name. So Sprechen Sie Deutsch, Singing the Blues, or 24 hour bands, Brian.
Singing the blues.
All right. Today on Take on Woods, we're looking for five song titles and or bands that include the word blues in their name. You'll have 60 seconds to answer as many as possible. If you don't know one, say pass. We'll come back to it. If there's time left on the clock, first question's the 2-second song. Paulie's going to play you some music. Listen carefully. Then give me the title and the artist, one of which will contain the word blues. To score that point, we'll go on from there. Brian, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Paulie, good to go? All right.
Good.
Category is Singing the Blues. 60 seconds on the clock. Brian, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Woods.
The Blues Traveler. I don't know the song. So
okay. Which 1977 Steely Dan hit features the sportsy line, they call Alabama the Crimson Tide? Which 1955 song did Johnny Cash famously perform at a live show at a Northern California penitentiary in 1968?
Oh, my God. Stop.
Which 1960s English rock band was known for songs including Knights in White Satin?
Moody Blues?
Correct. Which 1983 single was the first released by Elton John in 8 years and became one of his biggest hits of the 1980s?
I guess that's why they call it the blues.
Correct. Do you think you can get that 2-second song title? Got the band.
Runaround?
It is Runaround. Which 1977 Steely Dan hit features the sportsy line? We ran out of time, but we did get three. Not bad. Runaround by Blues Traveler, the Moody Blues. And I guess that's why they call it the blues. Deacon Blues is Steely Dan, and the Folsom Prison Blues. I don't know if it's going to be enough, though. We'll see. Hang on the line, Brian. Brian's score is locked in. Woods, unaware of what's been transpiring, puts his headphones on and gets ready without the category. That hurt him yesterday in a very tense 1-1 game. Put 60 seconds back on the clock. Woods, your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck. Let's take on Brian.
Run Around Blues Traveler.
Correct. Which 1977 Steely Dan hit features the sportsy line, they call Alabama the Crimson Tide?
Pass.
Which 1955 song did Johnny Cash famously perform in a live show at a Northern California penitentiary in 1968?
I feel like the category could help. Folsom Prison Blues?
Correct. Which 1960s English rock band was known for songs including Nights in White Satin?
Oh, Moody Blues.
Correct. Which 1983 single was the first released by Elton John in 8 years and became one of his biggest...
I guess that's why they call it the Blues.
Correct. Which 1977 Steely Dan hit features the sportsy line, they call Alabama the Crimson Tide?
Deacon's Blues? No.
Deacon Blues.
Deacon Blues.
Yeah. Either way, 4-3 or 5-3 if I give you the Deacon Blues on that one. Good playing, Brian, but not quite enough to take down Woods today. And singing the blues, our category.
Yeah, I think Deacon's Blues would have gotten past the
judges,
Jeopardy judges.
It's just Deacon Blues.
Deacon Blues.
They call Alabama the Crimson Tide. Call me Deacon
Blues. Who is Mount Vesuvius?
What is Mount Vesuvius? Well, that'll work. That's fine.
All right.
I don't know that song because
well
Steely
played.
Dan's terrible, so I would never listen to that song.
Well played. That's a good song.
It's an oxymoron.
And Folsom Prison.
What is? Oh, that's Folsom.
I think that's Folsom Prison Blues. Yeah.
Any time to play it.
If you don't know musical trivia, we've got Real or Fake for you tomorrow. That's a chance to qualify for Las Vegas without having to take on Woods, actually.
Yeah.
So we do that each week on our Throwback Thursday. That's tomorrow, though. All right. Don't Do This is coming up next. As we said, we have one of those hit-by-pitch situations yesterday. Not with Jurickson, who, by the way, Paulie said there is one game that they didn't
Monday
hit
night,
him.
He was not
oh,
hit.
Good.
They did not hit
good.
Him.
That's nice.
All three
once.
In Pittsburgh, and then last night, Andy was hit twice against the Marlins on, I think, Saturday. So.
But it comes into play in our Don't Do This segment.
We had we had an announcer slip up last night. I think we've all been guilty of this one.
All right, that's coming up next after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't Do This.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't Do This.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Don't Do This. Two stories that make you shake your head. Something a little more positive at the end. And I was thinking last night, we've seen all these times Jurickson Profar has been hit down on the leg and by the shoe tops. And there was an incident in baseball last night involving George Springer. We'll get to the audio in just a second. But remember the old days when umpires would check for shoe polish to see if...
Yeah.
You actually got hit by a pitch. They don't do that anymore, do they?
I don't know that many guys polish their shoes anymore, which is a good idea.
But, I mean, a lot of them are wearing, you know, like white-colored shoes, and they're more like tennis shoes with spikes, as opposed to the old days when they like black, you know, they have the black and the shoe polish
shoe
on
polish
their shoes.
Up. Yeah.
And if you got... If the ball was in the dirt near your feet, the umpire would then go check the ball. If there was shoe polish on it, they'd say, oh, it hits you, and they give him first base. It's like hearkening back to a previous era.
Now, had George Springer shined his shoes last night, he's in great shape.
He's probably in good shape.
Great shape.
Have you ever get your shoes shined?
Oh, I love to get my shoes shined.
Used to be all the time, like in the airport, you know, they have a shoe shine station.
It's one of...
Or like in a casino, they'd have shoe shine stations.
It's one of life's pleasures. For me, it was. And I don't dress up much anymore. But when I did, And I would have a layover, and because I traveled a ton, and I'd travel in a suit and tie. And I would get to the airport in early so I could get my shoe shine for my big business trip. And I love it. I'll drop my shoes off if they get a little scuffy and, you know, take them to a place and they shine them up for me. I do love a good, nice, shined shoe. Why don't you go home and get your shine box, Ben? Okay?
That's the stuff that you keep your equipment in.
That's right.
To shine the shoes, the little brush.
Yeah, you've been around. I don't shine shoes anymore.
And everything. Yeah, you just don't see that as much anymore. But then again, the shoes that we wear nowadays are not really polish friendly for the most part. Anyway,
for you, it's hard to polish flip flops.
Neither here nor there. This was last night. George Springer in the game. It was the Toronto Blue Jays against the Los Angeles Angels. Springer of the Blue Jays at the plate. Where do we pick up the audio? Because there's a ball in the dirt. It's not ruled a hit by pitch. He says, "I was hitting the foot."
So
they go.
It's like
they go for the replay, and then you see the replay on television, and the ball clearly changes direction.
Clear as day.
I mean, this audio starts with the ruling.
Okay. So yeah.
Call
so
has been not over.
It clearly changes direction. So unless physics has
you can see his foot move.
His foot somehow changed.
Can hear it. A thud.
It looked pretty clear. Like okay, he's ready for the call to be overturned and take his base.
What are we doing here?
And then it doesn't happen, and he loses his mind.
Clear microphone tonight.
Toronto's challenging the call of no hit by pitch. The call in the field stands. No hit by pitch.
See?
Wow. Toronto loses their challenge.
The reason is...
He's not real happy about that.
Springer's upset, and now John Schneider's going to have to calm him down so he doesn't get thrown out of this game. And now he has been thrown out. And now Schneider's about to get thrown out. Well, it's getting hot here now, and George Springer in the face of the home plate umpire, Manny Gonzalez, and he has to be restrained by his manager, John Schneider, here.
He lost
Vladimir Guerrero comes over as well.
This is like George Brett.
Springer is still trying to get at the home plate umpire.
I've never seen George Springer this animated before.
Well, and this is the problem with replay and Major League Baseball's replay reviews, because it has to be extremely obvious.
It was.
If it's not extremely obvious, they don't overturn them. We've seen it so many times, and now here is a player, George Springer, irate, but he was clearly hitting the foot.
I mean, everyone acknowledged he was clear. I don't know if that's not... Now, could you actually see like the foot crumple in? No, I mean it changed directions. He pulled his foot back.
What's replay for? If we're not going to get it,
you know, it's basically in a court of law. I think that would have held up that it hit his foot. Yeah, do you have to assume a little bit that when the ball changes direction, that what it hit was his foot? Because those balls are going so fast, even on replay, it's hard to necessarily exactly see what it hits, but we know it hit his foot.
Yeah.
Why didn't you overturn that one?
Well, I mean, dude, think about last night. How about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa? Why don't they call that rule anymore when you just lean your elbow in and get hit? They used to sometimes would be like, no, you leaned into that pitch. It was clear as day that Kiner-Falefa leans into that pitch and takes his base.
You had Bryce Johnson thrown out at second, and that was replayed. The Padres lost that one, and it stood.
Yeah, which I don't agree with.
That might not have been over, like, clear that he was safe. I thought he was safe, but I wasn't 100% sure, so they didn't overturn it.
My conspiracy theory is they'd already overturned one for the Padres earlier in the game, a very clear play at first base. They overturned that, and they're like, well, we're not going to be wrong twice. And so we're going to say there's not enough evidence. I thought he was safe as day.
But he was called out on the field.
Yeah,
and they just didn't feel like they had enough to call him safe the second time around. So those are your replay mishaps from last night.
Well, here's an announcer's mishap last night. And so it's the Guardians and the Cubs, and they're playing, and Drew Smyly is on the bump. And let's see, the gentleman calling the game, we're from Guardians broadcasters Matt Underwood and Rick Manning, and it was very, very animated call, but Rick Manning in particular had an interesting way to put it.
My goodness!
Oh, Smyly, he wants to kill himself. He hung up a breaking ball, and boy, Noel took advantage of it. Oh, that's what he's capable of doing.
We had a little superfluous hot mic in the background. I think we had an Effia in there. Might have picked it up on the stream, but yeah, he said Smyly.
The right thing to say. Now he wants to die of embarrassment.
That's a good one.
That's okay. But obviously, you don't want to be flippant with the
suicide,
you know.
Unaliving.
So we're trying to be better about such things. Did it happen all the time when we were growing up?
Yeah. I still say it, and I don't mean to say it.
But, yeah, what you're really saying is, oh, he could die of embarrassment right now.
Correct. Yeah, just one of those.
That's a better way to handle it.
I honestly, if I'm thinking about it clearly right now, I don't know anyone in my life that hasn't said it. You know what I mean? It's just one of those that it's like, it's kind of ingrained in us. Doesn't make it right, but definitely you could see it slipping out on the air. He wasn't being literal.
Finally, a little doo-doo this here on a Wednesday.
DD mega doo-doo.
Love to see when you... what?
Good question here. Dominic. Is Suicide Squeeze not okay? It is. They still say it all the time.
Huh.
Suicide Squad is a movie.
Well, I don't know that the word is taboo.
It's just how you use it.
How you use it. He didn't say he wants to commit suicide. He said, well, he wants to kill himself for that pitch. Flippant, but
yeah,
definitely doable. Interesting.
Love to see when colleagues support their coworkers in quiet ways. And our colleague, Annie Heilbrun, had this story, and it was mentioned again in the UT.
Are you patting yourself on the back for supporting your colleague in a quiet way right now?
No, I'm not.
Oh, because that's just, what it sounded
no,
like.
No, actually, it's Xander Bogaerts who's supporting his colleague in a quiet way.
I thought you were saying, I'm so great for supporting Annie Heilbrun. Here it is. I was like, let's don't do this for you.
You can throw that in as well if you want it. But people have noticed recently that Xander's wearing these necklaces.
Yep.
I don't know, they're kind of like the bead mm-hmm. necklaces. And no one really knew the story, but Annie... enterprising Annie got to the bottom of it, tweeted the necklace Xander Bogaerts has been wearing was made by Padres trainer Ricky Huerta's daughter, Juliana, who's 13 and trying to raise money for her eighth grade trip to New York. He bought two necklaces off her to match his shoes, one orange and one blue. And he's been wearing them oftentimes during games, which is really, really cool. Nice thing to do.
So, interestingly enough, I mean, in Xander's comments, he goes, look at this thing. It looks like it's worth $20,000. He loved it. And so I know Ricky. He's our fantasy camp guy. We've known Ricky for years. He's like one of the best human beings you'll ever meet. And so I texted him. I go, I'm going to need two of those, one for each. And he wrote back, LOL. He's like, what colors you want? I go, yellow and brown. He goes, done. So I'm picking them up today for the kids.
Nice.
And but they're very excited because they want to wear what Xander Bogaerts
wears. Love Ricky. So Ricky's fantastic.
He's the best, man.
By the way, Annie, very enterprising because Xander Jackson was wearing kind of similar looking ones. So those aren't the Ricky Huerta daughter necklaces. Those are different.
Yeah, they're different.
Don't know the story behind those, but Xander for sure. And that is don't and do this for a Wednesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
And I know what some of you are thinking out there. And you're going, I mean, Xander is making so much money. Why don't you just pay for the trip to New York and not buy a necklace? It's not about that. It's about
earning your way
to New York and doing something and raising money. It's part of the lesson of going there. And he's doing a good job supporting Ricky and his daughter and doing the right thing.
Here's what I didn't ask. I didn't ask how much they cost. What if I get down there? He's like, all right, it's $5,000. I'm like, all right, guys, enjoy your...
Xander didn't have a problem with that.
Xander said they look like they're worth $20,000. Yeah. What if I get that at $2,500 each? I'm like...
Still, that's 10% of what they're worth. So you're getting a great deal.
No. What they look like they're worth. It's what they look like they're worth. I have no idea how much these necklaces cost, and I didn't ask. Great.
All right, we like to go through what else is happening now that we're doing some scoreboard watching and the playoff races, get you caught up on what you missed last night, and more coming up next with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Want to throw just a couple of more nuggets from the Padres game that we didn't really get to last hour from yesterday, but how about Luis Arraez had a solid night, 2 for 3 and a walk, scored 2 of the 3 runs, and we talked about that yesterday on the show that we need... You know, Luis Arraez setting the table is really big Padres.
We talked about that in the golf course.
Oh, we talked about it in the golf course. Well, that turned out to be true.
I said to you, you know what I could use tonight is a real Luis Arraez night. You know, a good solid 4 for 4, 3 for 4, a couple runs scored. We need a good solid Luis Arraez night. And Ben goes, yep, that's exactly. He goes, and think about it. You know, if he does that, and Manny knocks in two, and Crony knocks in two, we win that ball game. And in fact, there was a stat that came out in AC's newsletter this morning. It says that when Manny Machado drives in two runs, the Padres are like 19-0. So setting the table for Manny, if he can get the job done, Padres win a lot of ball games.
Luis Arraez, even though he's been playing with a torn thumb ligament, raises his average to 306, which leads the National League by 5 points over Marcell Ozuna, second at 301. And they're the only two guys who are even hitting over 300 in the National League. After that, it's Ketel Marte, 298, Shohei Ohtani, 297, Jurickson Profar, 295. And in 10th place right now at 286 is Jackson Merrill, who I don't even know if you want to point it out. Didn't do anything incredible or spectacular last night. And it actually is almost newsworthy that he just had a, I mean, he had a home run robbed.
I thought that
was about it. He had one that looked like it was gone and it got robbed. I don't know if it would have gotten over or high off the wall or bounced off the wall and then off the glove and then went over the wall for a ground rule double. But it was close, certainly. And he looked like he thought he got it. I thought he got it. Didn't quite get it. But and they were able to win without Jackson Merrill doing something insane.
Yeah.
In the game last night.
Absolutely piped it, and yeah, don't change a thing, man. I mean, that's just one of those, like, hang with them. That's what Mutt always says. It's a big league, hang with them. You hit the ball hard and do your job, and sometimes it doesn't go out. But I think he thought he got it. I certainly thought he got it. It had that sound, but he got maybe Petco'd a little bit last night.
Pretty crazy, looking at these stats with the leaders of the batting average in the National League. And even with it, I mean, the WAR stat does not ever reflect well for Luis Arraez.
No.
His WAR this year is 0.1.
It's the defense.
He's not a great defensive player,
right.
But that doesn't, you know, it's also only three home runs.
No, I'm saying his lack of anything defensively
right.
hurts.
But
him.
Also lack of power, lack of speed. Has only stolen five bases. Did have one last night,
yep.
But has only stolen five bases. Lack of on base percentage because he doesn't walk a lot. It's a very polarizing player. There are people.
Not for me. He's not.
I don't think so either. I love watching him. I love how he fits on this team.
I don't wade into the online arguments about Luis Arraez. I don't. I wade into them with some other players, but I don't think you're going to convince new school baseball fans that Luis Arraez is a valuable member of your team. I think if you're an old school baseball fan, you absolutely understand. But I find myself somewhere in the middle most times. But when
the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
The truth probably is somewhere in the middle. But
it's hard to argue because with a 0.1 WAR, you're essentially saying that you could replace Luis Arraez with Joe Schmo.
Right.
And you will get just as much production.
See, and you know
and
that
I can't
to be
believe,
false.
I do not believe that that is true.
You absolutely know that to be false. You know that to be false. That is not an accurate measurement of Luis Arraez. It's just not. He does the hardest thing in the sport, and he does it well, very well. And does he always come through? No, he doesn't. But who do I want up there when I need a runner moved over, when I need a knock? He's the one I feel most comfortable with. Also, the things that drive, you know, I don't know too many these days. I don't know too many, like when advanced metrics really started to be talked about, I was finding people in camps where I said, you clearly don't watch. You're just looking at these numbers. You don't need to watch the games. You can look at the numbers and say the result or what the expected result should be. When you watch Luis Arraez every night, you do realize, man, he brings a lot more to the table. When he got here, this team changed. He was a big, big part of changing the energy of this team. The work ethic that he has, you can't quantify that, Ben. You can't measure that in a number. And his ability to put bat on ball in this day and age is exceptional. It's exceptional. And if you've played baseball and you played with a guy that's a really good hitter, and you look at them in awe, and you go, how do they do it? Paulie and I play with a bunch. We play with a few where I'm like, how do these guys continue to barrel the baseball almost every time they're up? Paulie and I begging for one barrel a week. These guys are getting four. And it's like, God dang. If you see it, you know it. And so I don't know, Ben, that I'm going to pay the guy $20 million a year. I don't know I'm going to pay him that much.
That would be a mistake.
Correct. Yeah. But I look at him and I go, you're so immensely valuable to this team.
Could you have a lineup full of Luis Arizes? If you had Luis Arize 1 through 9 and an average pitching staff, WAR would tell you that would be one of the worst teams in baseball.
Correct.
Be like a 60-win team
the
if you did
that.
The
eyes tell me it'd just be station to station, base hit.
Stringing them together. But eventually,
you'd make the three outs. You'd never get the big three-run homer or anything like that. You would have a poor defensive team out there. I see what the point is of the WAR. I just think that he is a great addition to this team in particular at this moment in time, and he will always have a valuable place on a team somewhere. It'll never look good in WAR. He'll never be among the leaders in WAR.
And I think, you know, honestly, that's his game. And I'm so in awe of watching him hit. Sometimes I'm in awe of watching him spoil pitches. It's just the hardest thing to do to get that barrel on the ball. And I know he doesn't hit it particularly hard either, but bat control is really now. If we get to the playoffs. You know, I think that's when you look at Luis Arize because it doesn't matter who's pitching. It's the lowest level guy, the top level guy. When you get to the playoffs, you face the cream of the crop. No matter who it is, I feel like Luis Arize can hit him, you know, every single time. Manny Machado is my favorite player. I don't always feel that way about Manny, right? Like, yeah, if you hang one, he's going to make you pay. But if you're locating your slider and your heater up and in, I'm feeling pretty good about your chances against Manny. But with Luis Arize, he's going to get you. He's going to drive you crazy. So I love him. I hope he's here for a long time. I don't think you can pay him some exorbitant amount of money. And that's weird to say, right? You're the best at the hardest thing there is to do in your sport. But you don't deserve a lot of money? It doesn't make any sense. But that's the way that the game is now.
And you'd agree that this is the best Padres clubhouse we've seen.
Since we've been together.
Since we've been a show together.
And you've been covering the team a lot longer than
he's
me.
He's part of it. David Peralta, I think, is a big part of it. A guy that everyone likes and respects, and he's producing. He had another home run yesterday, obviously. His second off Luis Ortiz in both of these series. I think Donovan Solano is a big part of it. I mean, A.J. Preller has really hit on these pieces that he's added to the Padres here for this season in particular and put together his best group overall roster construction. By far, I think, AJ's best job.
I don't think it's
so far.
Any question.
All right. Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Go through the rest of the action in Major League Baseball, what you missed, right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Katie points out in the chat, today is David Peralta's birthday. 37 years old today.
Happy birthday, David Peralta. Nice addition. One of the hottest hitters right now for your San Diego Padres.
And when they needed him, when Tatis was gone and getting in there a lot against right-handed pitchers and playing a pretty decent right field. I mean, is he covering more ground than most? No, but he's making the plays he needs to make, and he's done a good job out there.
Great job last night. 9 for his last 22, 409 average, pair of homers, .818 slugging. You'll take that from a 37-year-old.
Padres, of course, did not gain any ground on the L.A. Dodgers, who got 4 home runs in Milwaukee, including Shohei Ohtani's 37th and a 7-2 win over the Brewers. So the Padres remaining 3.5 games behind the Dodgers in the NL West race, as do the Arizona Diamondbacks, who once again were on the verge of a loss at home to the Colorado Rockies, down 3-1, and then or 3-0, and then it was 3-2, and then in ninth inning, bases loaded, 2 outs, 2 strikes on Jake McCarthy,
down to the last strike,
and he just chopped one the other way down the line and scored 2 for the walk off win as Arizona remains as hot as the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only, you know, if there's any bright side, there's beating up on the Rockies and taxing the, you know, I mean, we got the Rockies next in Colorado, House of Horrors. I'm trying to change my mindset about
House
it because
of what?
House of Horrors.
Horrors?
That's what I said. House of Horrors. Did it sound differently?
Just making sure.
A House of fine. Horrors. I do not like Coors Field. It is a house of horrors.
Very good.
I'll say that like that forever now.
Horrors.
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 It's a horror house.
The best little horror house.
The best little
in
the
Colorado.
Worst little horror house in Colorado. Paulie's eyes when I said it. Was it?
Hey,
can you not? I just said horror.
The Braves remain four games back of the Padres and Diamondbacks, but still holding that last wild card position in the NL as they won another 10-inning game against the Giants, with a Giants fans turning on Bob Melvin big time for his 10th inning decision. So the Braves scored on a Travis d'Arnaud single in the 10th. Yeah. They're up 4-3. Bob Melvin then just tries to bunt the tying run over from second to third with one of their hottest hitters, Fitzgerald, their new young shortstop, and didn't work out for them.
He apparently, now, I watched the play five times this morning because I wanted to see what they saw. They called him for interference. Like, he hit it and the ball came back and hit him, but it never hit him. The ball never hit Fitzgerald on the bunt. It should have been.
Did he block the catcher from making the play?
He bunted and ran to first, but d'Arnaud comes out, grabs the ball, throws the guy out at third. Great, great play. They waved that one off, sent him back to second, called the hitter out. It actually worked out worse for the Braves. But again, this is the, you know, this is the mentality now of when you're scratching and clawing and fighting, you took one of your hottest hitters and you asked him to sacrifice.
So the Braves could have had the lead runner out at third.
Correct.
And instead he had to go back to second.
Goes back
still
to second.
In scoring position.
Two outs now, and then the next guy popped out.
I wonder, like, do we need to install, like, a accept or decline penalty, like in football?
Ooh, that would be a... We will decline...
Would you rather have...
Offsides on the defense.
If you're Brian Snitker,
the penalty.
Say, no, that's fine. We'll
take the results of the play.
Take the results of the play.
You can't... There are...
two outs runner on first or two outs runner on second.
We had that situation in a Padres game earlier this year. Remember, Mike Shildt had the option of taking... the result of the catcher's interference or the catcher's interference, and he said, I'll
play for more
the
runs.
Catcher's interference and play for more runs, because he could have taken the out and the run scoring, but declined, accepted the penalty and went for more runs, and it worked out for him. So we do have that already, apparently, in baseball. The A's helped out. You said that yesterday. The A's were one of the hottest teams in the American League.
And, the second half,
They did that. They beat the New York Mets 9-4. Fourth straight loss for the Mets, who all of a sudden have fallen two games out of a playoff spot with the Braves and six games behind the Padres and the Diamondbacks. And that's the margin now clear of a postseason spot for the Padres and Diamondbacks. So that's big. Cardinals ran into Hunter Green, who's making a Cy Young push for the Cincinnati Reds.
Vomited again.
He did? Oh, he threw up again?
Vomited
again.
Well,
I know he pitched well. I didn't see the vomit.
What's going on?
Nerves. He when he gets nervous, he vomits into his glove.
He did it in the glove, and I think he had the ball in the web of his glove.
I do not want to hit that one.
Have you ever been so nervous you vomited? I have.
I have not.
Yeah,
you have.
I have. I have anxiety.
What was it that made you so nervous? Well, hold on to it for when we come back. I'm curious. I mean, I felt like nauseous because I was nervous. Queasy. I get the butterflies.
Yeah.
But I've never actually thrown up because of nerves. You did.
Mm-hmm.
Marlins beat the Phillies 5-0. Phillies have fallen back. We talked about that earlier. And Juan Soto hit three home runs. Yankees beat the White Sox 4-1. Back in first place in the AL East.
Three solo shots.
Yeah, 4-1. That's it. All right, we'll come back, find out about Woods' battle with the nerves next here on The Fan.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.